Hi, I am your host, Arlene Mahoney, with SeniorLivingGuide.com podcast. SeniorLivingGuide.com is proud to be part of the Senior Focused podcast. But did you also know that our one-stop shop website allows seniors and their caregivers to spend time reviewing different senior housing options in one easy-to-navigate website, taking the stress out of making such a hard decision? Well, now you do. So go check us out at SeniorLivingGuide.com. And today we have some fabulous guests in the studio. Our guests today are Dr. Pam Trinetti and Janet Rooks. Dr. Trinetti is an osteopathic, it's a mouthful, physician who specializes in geriatrics. Janet Rooks is a social worker and a dementia care specialist. They work together at the Parish Senior Consultation Center, where they focus on the care of patients with dementia. Dr. Trinetti is the Director of Aging Services at Parish, and Janet Rooks coordinates Parish Senior Solutions, which provides education, resources, and support for seniors and their caregivers. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio today, ladies.
Always happy to be here.
Yeah. Today's going to be a really interesting, different podcast than what we've done in the past, and I'm very much looking forward to it. We're going to do some like little role reversals today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to let you tell us what we're going to do.
Well, Darlene, over the past few weeks, you have been kind enough to share your personal story about taking care of your dad and his journey with dementia. You really touched our hearts, and we thought you deserved to tell the whole story if you're up for it, and share with the listeners, because I think that they're going to learn from you. Mm-hmm. And so we like to kind of guide them and you through this story and kind of jump in with some of our thoughts based on what we've seen with other patients and their families.
Absolutely. And I'm so happy to be able to do this. And it's a hard journey for me to go back in that time machine, because it's clearly something I think about, something I don't want to think about sometimes. But for me, if it's something that can help someone that's beginning this journey, or may not have begun the journey but will at some point in the future, can avoid some of the things that I had to kind of go through, and that my dad had to kind of go through, and just kind of my lessons learned, that's what it's all about. And if it can offer some kind of support and understanding on dementia and being a caregiver, I want to help anyone that, because if I had heard some of the stuff and known some of the stuff before what I went through, I think I would have maybe done a better job, maybe been more proactive for my dad, and we're kind of understood maybe what was going on. Because actually, I thought I was in the know, but I wasn't. So I think it's good to have all the knowledge at your fingertips. So I think I do want to share my story, and hopefully it will help someone else down the road that starts to experience some of the things that I experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to say thank you first of all, because I know it's painful working with my caregivers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's raw.
Yeah.
You know, even though it may have been a while, it is raw. So thank you. So what was the first hint that you had that something was wrong with your dad?
Well, you know, for me, I think probably there was hints that I ignored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My mom was struggling with end stages, and we didn't really know it was end stages of ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. So for me, I, and this is part of my personality trait, which I, you know, am not super excited that I have, but it was kind of a Scarlett O'Hara thing. I'll think about that tomorrow. I'm dealing with mom now. I'll think about some of these red flags potentially with my dad tomorrow. And I made excuses for my dad. Well, it's because he's dealing with mom, he has anxiety, maybe some different things with him, which were like things like, I left my keys at your house, or he would make comments about, have you ever been like at a stoplight and then you forget where you're going? He made that comment.
Oh my.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm thinking, well, I, you know, maybe.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And then, so I'm making excuses for him. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, well, you know, he's just having anxiety. I just made excuses. But my mom had some concerns, and I wanted to ease her mind, so I made excuses for him as well.
Yeah, to protect her.
To protect her. Mm-hmm. But I think she was even trying to protect us mm-hmm. because she knew. It was a lot of that. I mean, you're making excuses. You're doing these different things, mm-hmm. Which I now feel bad mm-hmm. because I didn't take care of him so she wouldn't have to.
Mm. But they had been together, so between the two of them, they were one good person. They took care of each other because they made that promise years and years ago that they would be there to take care of each other. They were protecting you children, too. Even though you were adult children, they were protecting y'all. So they probably didn't make a pact to do that, but they were just doing that. So don't feel bad that you didn't do that, but that's just what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I hear it all the time. People will call and say, you know, this is what's going on. So it's common.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say it happens all the time, but I hear it quite a bit with people calling and saying, this is what's happened. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom's no longer there. My dad's no longer there. I didn't see this.
Right.
I didn't see it until, you know, they weren't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, wow, it's not working anymore.
Right.
So don't beat yourself up because this has happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or,
yeah. But I mean, it was just like little tiny things like that and nothing major, just like weird things like that.
And that's what we usually hear is somebody says, I'll say, turn back the clock. When did you first notice it? Well, 2 years ago, we noticed this little thing. And then last year, this. And then either there's a crisis or it's just so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So did your mom ever say anything outright or say, kids, you got to know something about this?
I think that she tried to, and my sister honestly was even 10 times worse than I was. She just doesn't want to hear anything negative. So I wanted to put it in the bucket of, I'll think about that later. I'm going to deal with you, Mom. I'm going to deal with your health crisis. And then my mom was in hospice for a while and then passed away. So it was basically dealing with her and trying to just kind of get past all that, because that was a very hard journey. It's going through all of that. So after she passed away, I think I didn't really want to acknowledge, first of all, he was still very independent. And he's a very stubborn man. He's been a stubborn man since his first breath, I'm pretty sure.
One lady came to our office and she said, my husband is stubborn. And I said, oh, do they make another kind?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Please forgive me, all you husbands out there. We just
So, I mean, they were living in a 55 and up community, independent community, and he was still doing his thing. And I was still talking to him and seeing him on a regular basis. My son was at UCF and lived very close to him, and he was still visiting with him, having breakfast and doing things with him. So I was trying to keep as much, you know, in his life, but there were still things that were kind of clearly getting a little bit weirder.
Did your son say that he had noticed any changes in his grandfather, or was it grandpa is just wonderful?
He was an 18, 19-year-old kid. I mean, Papa's just a little
eccentric.
Papa's just Papa. I mean, he doesn't. Yeah, he's a boy. I mean, if it had been my daughter, she would have had more to say.
Men up today. My goodness.
Yes. And I would quiz him, but he would. No, he didn't really very much. He didn't have a lot to offer. And I would have him, hey, go check on Papa. But, you know, some of the very big signs for me is when he started having issues with not answering his phone and then telling me he's not able to answer his phone. And that's when I started having, like, some major issues.
Okay. And that's what we'll see is struggles. We ask that question, you know, oh, no, I just don't go on the computer anymore. Yeah, I can't just get this new cell phone to work.
Yeah.
And families will notice those kind of things.
Yeah.
Or the cell phone's broken.
The
cell phone's broken, the remote's broken, and it's been replaced 3 or 4 times, and it still doesn't work right.
Exactly. I mean, and if I had known some of these things, they would have been like huge red flags to me, and I just thought, this is so weird. Like, he calls me and says, I have a new phone because my old phone isn't working. So I have a new phone number. And I thought, okay, so that's really weird because usually you can keep your own phone number. Mm-hmm. He's had the same phone number forever. I've had the same phone number for, I don't even want to say how long, since like the 90s. That's how long it's been since like Verizon, before Verizon was Verizon. I don't even know what it was. But that's how long I've had my phone number. So I thought it was odd that he had to get a new phone number. But I'm like, okay, well, moving to when he was near the very end, when finally I took over, I realized he had more than one phone, more than one phone number.
Oh,
yeah,
and
so,
more than one phone provider. So he was paying several different, and that's what we'll see a lot of too. The person has a cable and they have a satellite. Because the one didn't work or they got sold the other one.
Mm-hmm. He had multiple of those as well.
Okay.
Yes.
And your sister, Janet, you have a good description of how families are on the same page.
Oh, yeah. You know, because everybody's got their own, I call it their own book. Mm-hmm. And they're in different pages, different chapters. And some of them actually have different books of acceptance of what's going on. The caregiver, the one that's there actually doing the caregiver, hands-on caregiver, they're in one acceptance phase of caring for the person that they love. Mm-hmm. And then I call it the family member that's out of town or even that's in town that's just not really there. They are not understanding the disease process, acceptance, this sort of thing. And, you know, heaven forbid the grandchildren, because that's grandpa. And I have actually had, not my daddy, my daddy's not, no, don't tell me anything's wrong. Not my daddy.
Yeah, my daddy put the rockets up in space. He can't possibly have forgotten how to use a computer at this point. So they're not on the same page. No. They're not even on the same chapter. Sometimes they're
absolutely
not in the same book.
Right. Absolutely. You know, my daddy can do anything. My mom can do anything. And they'll call. And the phone calls are just, they're superficial. How you doing? Fine.
Yes.
Did you have breakfast? Yeah. Well, I'm sure you had that bowl of cereal. Yeah. And it's just really simple phone calls that they see as everything's just wonderful. So then when they talk to the person that's caregiving, i.e. you, it can't be. You're just making all this up. You're just making, you're blowing it out of proportion. I just think you need to, you just need to back off.
Yeah.
He's okay.
Well, that was not my experience with my sister. She she knew, but we had varying degrees on how to deal with it. And that's the other thing that I think you can definitely experience when it comes to caregiving with someone with dementia. It can absolutely tear families apart.
Oh, I've seen it.
And that's what happened in my family.
And we'll tell people, everybody sitting at this table, because we'll have family conferences, everybody wants to do the right thing. It's just there's different ways that they want to do it. And we have to bring that all together.
Right.
Everyone's heart's in the right place.
Right. Exactly. So it was very difficult. And I think she would sometimes get on the phone with him. And because she didn't understand why he didn't ask about her kids or find out about what was going, he didn't initiate conversations about her life and what was going on, it would upset her and she would be not understanding why he wasn't inquiring about those things and take them very personally without understanding that he doesn't have the ability to do that. I mean, he really doesn't connect that way anymore. And it's not that he doesn't care or doesn't love. And even in the stages near the end, my dad, until really 4 days before he died, recognized who I was. He never didn't know who I was. And I was waiting for that shoe to drop. I knew every time I would prepare myself before I would walk in that room that he may not know who I was. And every time he did, and he recognized me, he recognized my son, he recognized my nephew. But I would find in other people that were there would ask me, are you his daughter? And use my sister's name. And I'd said, no, I'm his daughter. Oh, you're Darlene. Okay. Well, he talks about his other daughter. So he's talking about her. And he's asked me multiple times about her. So he remembers her. And she's clearly active in his memories, but he unfortunately never saw her. She never came to visit, so which is still something that I can't even process, honestly. Mm-hmm.
But for some people, it's just too hard.
Right.
And you brought up...
And I do believe that that's... I want to believe that that's why. It was to protect her own emotional well-being.
Yeah, it happens. Mm-hmm. You mentioned two little things I just want to touch on, and that's the egocentricity of our patients with dementia. Mm-hmm. That there isn't that empathy and how are you doing? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, sometimes I want what I want when I want it. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you're doing. I this has come into my mind. I'm thinking about it. So we have to run up to the attic and get that tea set right now, even mm-hmm. if you're trying to get three kids ready for school. Mm-hmm. Also, no, our patients with dementia don't initiate things. You and I wake up, we have 10 things on our list and we know our routine. But families will say, well, they never want to do anything. They never get up and say, hey, let's go somewhere today. Let's mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. not part of the how the brain is processing anymore.
Right. Right. No, my dad, getting him to go do anything, you know, really was very difficult. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember on Father's Day taking him, and I had something that he would have loved. I took him to a comedy show, very clean comedy show mm-hmm. for Father's Day. I was raised in a household where my father was very respectful to my sisters and my mother. Mm-hmm. He never used cuss words. I mean, mm-hmm. he treated us like ladies. He was, you know, that's the kind of dad I was raised with. But he, so I had made arrangements to take him to a nice lunch and take him to this comedy show, and he couldn't get out of that comedy show fast enough. I don't understand this. What is going on? I want to leave. And I'm like, he was like losing it in the comedy show.
It was too much. He wasn't processing it.
It was bizarre. Mm-hmm, it mm-hmm. was just bizarre. You know, and my son was there, and he was getting upset because he was like, Papa is not grateful that we mm-hmm. did this, because he was getting, like, my dad was literally getting angry. I mean, he was getting angry. Mm-hmm. And that is not really in his character to, he just wanted to go home, mm-hmm. which is where he spends most of his time. He wants to go home and get in his recliner and mm-hmm. Watch television. That's really where his happy place was.
Yeah, that's where the world made sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So tell us about getting him to the doctor and getting the diagnosis.
So that was like going to the dentist and pulling teeth. He did not want to go. By the time we were able to really just get him to the doctor, at that point, he no longer had his car. Mm-hmm. It had come to the point where it was a no-brainer. He had dementia or Alzheimer's, or he had some kind of cognitive disorder. Mm-hmm. It was just a given. He was refusing to go. But basically, I kind of tricked him, basically. That, you know, I made a doctor's appointment. I'm going to pick you up. We're going to go. He didn't really know what the doctor's appointment was. And he kept saying, I don't understand what this appointment is for. So, Dad, it's just, you know, it's just a health checkup. So he was a little peeved when we got in there. And then he got even more peeved, to be honest with you, when it became the series of questions on, you know, what year is it? Who's the president? I'm not stupid. I know who the president is. It's
whoever.
Yeah.
He couldn't even remember. Mm-hmm. I don't even think he could remember. Mm-hmm. He just kept searching for it. And then, you know, some of the questions were like, you know, how long has your wife been passed away? And he said 30 years. Well, it had been at that point less than a year. Ugh. And I'm Dad, I mean, for me, I started crying at mm-hmm. that point, because that was like a stab in my heart. I'm like, mm-hmm. Mom's not even been gone for a year. Why do you think she's been gone for 30 years? 30 years, Dad. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at me like, what? Like, he didn't understand. And, you know, he couldn't, you know, recognize animal pictures mm-hmm. and draw a clock. I mean, just epic fail. Mm. Epic fail. So that was just shocking. I mean, I knew it was going to be not great, but it was shocking.
Well, at the end of the visit, did they say, this is what you have, or did they want more tests?
She arranged for us to go have an MRI that day. Mm. Not the next day, not next week, that day. Mm-hmm. So we went over and had an MRI that day, and clearly it came back. He had vascular dementia.
Okay. And just a little definition for folks, that's the second most common dementia. It comes from hardening of the arteries and tiny, tiny, mini strokes. And we talk about the circulation to the brain looking just like a big old oak tree. Mm-hmm. And if you see one branch where all the leaves are brown, that's a big stroke. That's something's mm-hmm. wrong with the branch. But we're talking about little tiny leaves mm-hmm. that this little leaf had this memory of what your great-grandchild's name was. This had the recipe for meatloaf. You have a little tiny thread-like artery that gets plugged up. The little tiny head of the pin size piece of brain that held that memory has been damaged or destroyed. Mm-hmm. So you have all these losses. You're being robbed mm-hmm. of memories, abilities.
So, and this is the thing with my dad. So he had these like little things when my mom was alive, and then maybe some little things even after she died. Mm-hmm. It wasn't anything major. But it's like he would have almost like he would have huge setbacks mm-hmm. in big chunks of time. So it's like he would just have his like little weirdo things, you know, forgetting the keys or whatever. And then all of a sudden, he can't remember his PIN number. He can't work on his computer. All of a sudden, it just, it's like a brick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was a little stroke that occurred that took that mm-hmm. away.
Yeah. And it's, and then he would be, you know, kind of even keeled. And then clearly something else would happen where now he's met some lady that has stolen his car, and yet his car is in the driveway, but then he can't remember why it's just all of a sudden you're in crazy town. So it's that was the journey, that the end journey game that I'm kind mm-hmm. of talking about. So we went months of just, you know, the really kind of weirdo forgetfulness. And part of it for me in my journey is because he was very stubborn. He was not, you know, I would kind of prod him on, Dad, you know, what's going on? Why? And some of the little idiosyncrasies are my dad started hoarding a little bit. Well, my mom was a neatnik. Our house was neat as a pen. My mom was not a hoarder. My mom would get rid of stuff if we didn't need it. But literally, how many cans of Febreze do you need? Mm-hmm. How many markers? Oh my gosh, the man went to Costco and bought packages and packages and packages of markers. Mm-hmm. For what? I have no idea. The dog had more Shih Tzu. One Shih Tzu had 5 gazillion bags of dog food, all kinds of treats, all kinds of stuff that in 10 years, the dog couldn't eat. He just kept buying it. And the kitchen table became just cluttered with all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And then the breakfast nook table became an organized
chaos.
He tried to organize it with paper clips and pens and, you know, where he's trying to pay bills and his computer. And so he tried to make it like this separate office from, he actually had an office, and that was a hot mess. But it was just organized. It was mm-hmm. organized chaos. Mm-hmm. And so, and I also started noticing he was sticky noting. Sticky mm-hmm. notes were everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why do you need all these sticky notes? And on the coffee table, you have cups with pens. And there's cups with pens everywhere. And sticky notes everywhere. It was not quite right.
That was his reminder. I need to do this, so I'm going to write this down. Mm-hmm. I'm at the store. I need a highlighter. I need mm-hmm. a pen. I'm going to the grocery store. Oh, I always buy dog food, so I'm going to get a bag of dog food. Mm-hmm. Not knowing that the dog food's already there.
Right.
I need coffee. Oh, I drink coffee every morning. Let me get some coffee. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the routine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's what happens with someone that has dementia. They can't process that they've already got it there. So I always get it. So I must need it. So I'm going to go ahead and get it.
Mm. Yeah.
Even if it's, even if they've got a list, they're going to write it on the list because I always get it. So I'm going to get it.
Yeah. So he was doing that. And we found flashlights were everywhere. And we soon found out very quickly he had sundowners. He was going through the house at night. So, which is a whole different conversation, which didn't go over very well when he went into assisted living and when he was at the hospital, because they didn't really know, they don't really know how to deal with sundowners in those positions. It's really hard. So it's difficult.
Y'all went through a lot.
Yeah.
You really did.
Yeah. The first for me, you know, to one of the very first, we're moving now, making decisions to move him to assisted living. I'm going to start utilizing my power of attorney to really just take over his finances and have that hardcore conversation with him was he called me. Well, yeah, the very first one was he called me to tell me he was unable to work his remote and he only had one channel. I said, how do you only have one? At first I'm like, well, how do you only have one channel? Giving him the benefit of the doubt that something was wrong. He says, well, I only have channel 13. They only gave me channel 13. So I send my son over there and say, figure out what's going on. And my son goes over there and he says, Mom, he calls me. He just doesn't know how to work the remote. He got new cable and he doesn't know how to work the remote. Well, come to find out now he has multiple cables. That was just new. But I will tell you this. My dad said to me when I asked him when I realized he had multiple cables, well, they sent me a notice in the mail that said I had to change because you can only have one cable. And I was thinking, back in the day, you could only have one cable. And I wondered if he was thinking, you know, they get all these advertisements. And he was thinking, oh, my gosh, now Bright House is the new one or whatever, Spectrum is the new provider. And I have to, I try to legitimize because this is what he's telling me. And then in the same instance, I look at all this mail these seniors get. I still get mail from my dad. And it's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Must do, must sign. Sign up now. Holy cow. It's terrible.
And if you forward the mail, you can't forward the what I call junk mail. You cannot forward junk mail. It still goes there. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure I don't forget to ask this. Did the doctor tell your dad? How did he react to this? How was that handled?
Oh, he acted like she was telling me he was having peanut butter and jelly for lunch.
Okay. Your heart was breaking.
Yeah. I already knew it, though. Yeah. I mean, at that point, he was actually living in assisted living at that point. I had already moved him. Yes.
Okay. Goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. So I already knew.
Was you that part just, of the the senior community? Oh, okay.
So, no. I moved him over to Brevard. He was living in Orlando next to UCF and a 55 and up. I moved him over here to Brevard about 5 minutes from my house.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had assisted living and then he could go into memory care at some point. So, yeah.
Oh, you know, you moved quick.
Yeah, I didn't waste any time.
But it was all about safety.
Absolutely.
His safety and, you know, people taking advantage of him. And, you know, and it was his safety. You reacted to the need of his safety.
Yeah.
And that's so important because a lot of times people are responding after something has occurred, something has happened. You mentioned he was no longer driving. You know, you know, that was something.
We'll talk about that. We'll be talking about that.
You know,
yes.
But, you know, and then because you were responding as opposed to reacting.
Yeah.
The fact that your heart was broken and he goes, and it was like getting a peanut butter and jelly sandwich because he didn't have the insight to understand what the doctor was telling him about the fact that he had vascular dementia. Oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
What time are we leaving?
Yeah.
Darlene, what time are we leaving?
And I thought he would be mad because anytime you questioned anything that questioned him, it was ticking him off. So I tried to stay on the outside of upsetting him because it would make him mad because I was starting to see a trend. And part of it is because I figured he probably knew something was wrong. When we finally started making the move to get him moved is when I think he realized something was wrong, and mm-hmm. he was now accepting it. Because I did get him the emergency alert mm-hmm. And put it in the house. And at first he's like, I don't need that. I don't need that. I said, Dad, I will feel better. I want you to have this. Put this around your neck, because I was so afraid. And I went over there about a week later, and he's wearing it. And he said, thank you so much for getting this for me.
Wow.
Because I feel so much safer having it. So clearly wow. he had something that scared him mm-hmm. To make him feel that way. And it just, that broke my heart to hear my dad say that, because he was clearly getting, he wasn't, you know, my dad was never like a muscle man. My dad was, everyone used to tease my mom because my dad never gained weight. He was, I prayed for the man's metabolism, but he was always strong for us as a family. I always saw him. He always mm-hmm. led our family. I always thought of him as, I don't know, he was just my dad. And mm-hmm. I used to call him Popsicle, and he mm-hmm. had nicknames for me, and I mm-hmm. just loved him. But to see him break down and disconnect, and for me, one of the hardest things for me ever is to look in my dad's eye, and you could see the fear. Mm-hmm. He was afraid,
yeah,
and he knew what was happening. The fear in his mm-hmm. eyes honestly scared me and saddened me, because I couldn't fix it.
Mm-hmm. But one thing you said that really jumped out there for me was you made the call button about you and not about him.
Mm-hmm.
So he accepted that because you made it about you.
Yeah.
You know, you knew he needed it. But instead of saying, Dad, use this because you might fall, mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because you made it about you. And yeah. he wanted to protect you.
Yeah.
And he, even though he had the deficits, he was still trying to protect you. Mm-hmm. And that's so cool.
And he, strangely enough, while we got rid of the machine, the call button, you didn't have to return. Mm-hmm. He wore that even in assisted living, which he didn't even, I don't even know why. It was like a necklace to him. He did mm-hmm. not want to give it up, even though it did nothing. Mm-hmm. I just let him wear it.
Mm-hmm.
He
Absolutely.
Just liked having that on there. And he would like pull at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that was about, but, you know, yeah. let him have it.
It was his lifeline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Janet, we have to tell a lot of people. Mm-hmm. We give them the diagnosis, and we found over the years that we tell the truth. We say it very gently, but we do tell the patient
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because often they come in and they'll say, I think I'm losing my mind. No, you have this disease of the brain that's making you have misperceptions and processing problems, and it's almost a relief for the patient.
Yeah, and the family members are scared to death. They'll say, don't use the A word, mm-hmm. you know, don't say Alzheimer's, because they are scared to death that how the patient, their loved one, may respond. And they're just sitting there going, okay, well, what time are we leaving? I'm mm-hmm. kind of hungry. And the family members are just sitting there sobbing. I mean, the tears are just flowing. I mean, we buy tissues by the case.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and I'm putting people back together that mm-hmm. are just falling apart. And it's like the insight of acceptance mm-hmm. has just gone away. I mean, they're kind of relieved. Sometimes the patients are relieved because they knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, well, mm-hmm. what kind of, is there medicine for that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friend's taking a pill. What about that pill? I saw mm-hmm. it on TV. Mm-hmm. Is there a pill you can give me for that?
Mm-hmm.
And they want that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, okay, well, Doc, is there something you can give me?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, give me something. Mm-hmm. I want yeah. that.
But there is also that fear that we see that people will come and say, my mom or dad or husband or wife, I can see it in their eyes
yeah.
that
mm-hmm.
they know something is mm-hmm. wrong.
Yeah.
They're afraid. We have to tell them what we're going to mm-hmm. do mm-hmm. to try and fix it,
yeah.
or at least help it.
Yeah.
And Dr. Trinity is wonderful about the fact that she'll say there's something robbing you of your memory.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And she will walk down that path as opposed to saying you have Alzheimer's, you have vascular dementia, mm-hmm. there is something robbing you of your memory, and acknowledging that there is something robbing you of your memory.
Mm-hmm.
And It's a relief sometimes to the patients, and we're going to do some tests to figure it out. And the family members relieved that the patients are accepting this, and it is heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking to be part of, to see it, and to be part of that journey with individuals. And it's difficult.
Well, families will say, "Do I have to tell them?" That's something. No, no, no. That's our job. And our job is also to support you as the caregiver, to give you the information. Did anybody offer you the book, The 36-Hour Day, or education, support group, anything to help get you through this?
No, no. I mean, we went to a neurologist. So, and basically it was, here's your diagnosis, here's your MRI, and this is the medication that I recommend, which, I mean, not a lot, you know, basically not a lot of, you know.
So then you were just in free fall.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was, you know, basically taking him back. Most of my support came from really the folks at the assisted living, which is, was Bethesda here in Brevard, and they did an amazing job at the time, but he wasn't there very long before he did fall. And once you have someone fall, that was pretty much the beginning of the end. He passed away probably 25 days later.
Oh my.
Yeah. He went into the emergency room, and he was in the emergency room completely cognizant of what was going on. He talked to us, and, "I can't believe I fell. I can't believe I did that." But I think he was having, he clearly, one of the things that I, you know, part of his dementia, I think, really affected his mobility. And you always think, for me, I always thought it's always about memory, that type of thing. He was having problems with his arm and his leg on the same side, utilizing some of the mobility in it. And when the leg started, I kept saying, what did you do with your leg? How did you hurt your leg? Nothing, nothing, nothing. But he was having a little bit of problem walking. And they never could figure out why. So I still have no idea why. And then they thought, well, maybe it's the gabapentin. I mean, there just was never an answer for why one particular leg was, he was shuffling a little bit with one particular leg. And I'm just spitballing based on what kind of happened with, he actually passed away from not being able to swallow. So, or not being able to eat. So I just think that he probably had some, maybe you can enlighten me a little bit better if that sounds correct, because I didn't ever really get a lot.
Backing up to what Dr. Daniel said, there's a lot of educational material out there. You know, when people come into our office, you know, The 36-Hour Day is a phenomenal book. It's a resource guide for caregivers. And I'm sorry you didn't have that book. I really am, because it's a guide. It's not one you're going to read from front to back and say, oh, well, I know this, I'll put it on a shelf. Or even one to download on a an electronic like a Kindle. Because it's a guide. You're going to, you know, highlight the pages, tear stain the pages, dog ear them. I often tell family members, tell everybody in your family to get this book, and you know, you'll call and say, look on page 84, the third line down, this is what I'm going through today. I also have what I call behavioral do's and don'ts. And like when you were talking about your dad getting angry and being frustrated, you know, you can call your sister and say, you know, that sheet I sent you, this is what dad's going through. So when you call him and he says, you know, he doesn't initiate the conversation, or he doesn't know anything, and you say, well, Dad, don't you remember, blah, blah, blah. No, he doesn't remember. You know, it's, you bring him into your world by you bringing him in. You know, and validating things that may be going on. So it's you have no control over anything except yourself. And the things that he's going through, and I know you learned that, but it's hard to teach it to somebody else. And, you know, there's different stages of dementia. You know, we provide that for people. And I'm sorry you didn't have that. I'm sorry you had to learn it the hard way.
So for me, and I know that we've talked about this a little bit before, it was like being on a roller coaster in the dark with no end and you could not get off. And not like the good fun roller coaster that mm-hmm. you have out at Disney World. It was just you wanted off the roller coaster. Every mm-hmm. day it was...
You were jerking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. every day it was something. I mean, even when you thought, okay, today is going to be a good day. You know, it just, it really was, it was like crazy land. It was really was, you were like stuck in crazy land. How, you know, we talked a little bit about my dad and how he lost his car. Mm-hmm. I knew that taking away his keys, he was going to fight for that because that was his mm-hmm. last tidbit of independence. And I really did want to give him his independence as long as possible because I knew that the reality was, the hardcore reality is once I moved him out of his house, he was never going to live independently again. Mm-hmm. He was never going to go back to his house. He mm-hmm. was never going to be, you know, driving around, doing what he mm-hmm. wanted to do. He was a photographer and an artist. I mean, that's what he loved. He loved nature and waterfalls and flowers and birds and bees and exploring. And all of that was going to be gone forever out of his life. And I didn't want to be the one to take that away from him. Mm-hmm. I wanted him to have that as long as he possibly could. And taking away his only means to find those things that brought him those joys, I was going to be the person to do that. So I wanted him to have it as long as he was safe enough to do it. He had some home care for a while that took him to some places. Mm-hmm. But the straw that broke the camel's back on taking away that car was he called me one day, and I was here in Brevard. He was in Orlando. As he called me, and he said, "Darlene, I was doing some business with this lady, and things went sideways. She said I owed her money, so she took my car. I don't have a car anymore." Everything just dropped because I'm like, someone took advantage of my father. Someone took my father. Someone stole from my father because I could see that happening at this mm-hmm. point in time.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm panicking. And then I thought, well, maybe the police took his car. Please, dear God, tell me a responsible police officer said, "Sir, you shouldn't be driving." I called the Oviedo Police Department and asked them, nobody's taken his car. I said, "Can you please go out there? My father's car has been stolen. I tried to get a hold of my son, but he was in class, but I had a girlfriend go over there." And she said, "Darlene, his car's in the driveway."
Oh, my.
And I'm like going, well, thank God for that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, mm-hmm. he can't afford to lose his vehicle. And then he comes out of the house and he says, I don't know what you're talking about. My keys are right here. And he pulls them out of his pocket. "I don't know what Darlene's talking about. She's crazy. I have no idea what you're talking about." Well, by then, I'm in the car driving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just threw everything in going, we're bolting to Orlando. And the police called me and said, "Ma'am, you've got to get this. You know, there's something wrong with your dad." Mm-hmm. I say, "I know, we're on our way. We're going to take care of it." So I did not take the blame for taking the keys. Mm-hmm. I said, "The police officer has told me you are not allowed to drive anymore, and I have to take your keys, and I have to take your car."
Mm-hmm.
And so I honestly put it on the police officer. I didn't take the blame for mm-hmm. it. And he was like, "I don't want to do that." I said, "The police said you have to, and you have to obey the law." "All right."
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of it. I really thought
that he would fight you.
He was going to mm-hmm. fight me. But I do think he knew he should not be driving.
Mm-hmm.
In his heart of hearts, he knew it was not good. But I did get someone that was coming out every day mm-hmm. and taking him to breakfast. He liked to go to breakfast. Mm-hmm. So I was having someone coming and taking him to breakfast mm-hmm. from a home care provider. But
yeah, and we often talk about how everybody's story has elements that are the same. Everybody mm-hmm. has mm-hmm. had to go through this,
yeah.
but it's unique to each person.
Yeah.
So as people come and they tell us the story, we explain that everybody it goes through this.
Yeah.
What you're experiencing, there's a shared. Other people have gone through it. Talk to them, and they will help you out. Mm-hmm. But it's also your unique story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people will call, whether it's calling for a new appointment mm-hmm. or meeting with them when they come in for an appointment. Dr. Pam's absolutely correct. The stories are so similar.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it in the support group. It is. It's mm-hmm. there's that common thread.
Yeah.
Of mm-hmm. you know, whether it be the behaviors or the dealing with stopping driving
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or getting to take the medication
mm-hmm.
or take a bath or whatever mm-hmm. it may mm-hmm. be. You know, there's nothing we haven't heard.
Yeah.
However, it's your life. It's mm-hmm. it's your page in the book of mm-hmm. what you're experiencing. And then back to what you're experiencing and where you are, your sister didn't experience that. Mm-hmm. She wasn't there doing the hands-on, mm-hmm. taking the car keys. And understanding really how the severity of it. So, you know, I commend you and hold you up for what you had to go through with your dad and being there and protecting him from that disease. You didn't take the car. The police didn't tell you to do it. The disease took him.
Mm-hmm.
The disease robbed him of his ability
yeah.
to do
yeah.
that. And, you know, and as sad as it really is, you protected your dad. You know, I don't know what your mom had to go through with your dad, because it didn't just happen after your mom passed away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but your mom protected you and your siblings from what was going on with your dad. Even when she didn't have the strength to do it, it came out that mm-hmm. she had to do that. So,
yeah.
you know, it was, mm-hmm. you know, I can't even imagine what her days were like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you ask a question that's kind of hanging in the air, mm-hmm. and that's, what caused him to pass away?
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't he swallow and why couldn't he walk?
Mm-hmm.
And families will ask us, what do I expect?
Mm-hmm.
And we always say it's either the long, slow progression of the disease, where mm-hmm. it's like falling down a flight of steps. You're on one step, and then something happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're on another step.
Mm-hmm.
And people do take to their bed. They forget how to walk safely. They forget how to swallow safely, because
mm-hmm.
it's a whole coordination of muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with vascular dementia, you have mini strokes that take out the ability to remember how to move your feet and how to swallow. And we'll say it's either going to be that, or it's going to be the big bad,
mm-hmm.
the fall, the fracture, the pneumonia, the mm-hmm. urinary tract infection that just takes them down to such a low level
mm-hmm.
that there's just no coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I hope this doesn't sound crass or callous, but I am grateful that he took the quicker journey, because I put him in assisted living in August, September. He mm-hmm. passed away in November.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. it wasn't a long drawn out, and he celebrated his 72nd birthday on Sunday, where he knew all of us, and he actually really was super jovial, mm-hmm. singing, happy, you
oh.
know, and he did mm-hmm. actually have some cupcake, which is like the very first food that he had eaten in
mm-hmm.
some time, really. And I walked in Monday morning, and he did not recognize me. And I don't really understand how this occurred, but he passed away on Thursday morning. So that was Sunday, his birthday. Monday, he didn't recognize me, but he was basically crazy. I mean, he mm-hmm. was physically aggressive. He was combative. He was yelling. He was screaming. He was using all kinds of profanity. He was not recognizable.
He was in a delirium, is
okay.
our word.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's confusion, personality change,
mm-hmm.
because of an underlying medical problem.
Okay. So that's basically mm-hmm. after his birthday,
mm-hmm.
the very next day, that's what happened and mm-hmm. didn't change.
Did you have hospice involved at
oh,
this
yes.
point?
Hospice yeah. was involved. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they could help with some of the medication and the
yes.
having someone sit right with him,
oh, yes.
perhaps?
Yes. Mm-hmm. As soon as that happened, hospice had been called in, but they weren't 24/7. Mm-hmm. But as soon as it happened, they were there 24/7.
And that's
until
called
he passed away.
Crisis care. They're in there with
yes.
crisis care.
Yes.
And did you have the support from the hospice support for you as well?
Yes, I did. I had spent some time with her, but they estimated, you know, that it would be weeks mm-hmm. before. So they were super shocked when he passed away on mm-hmm. Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were mm-hmm. just, we thought we were at the very beginning stages of a journey that ended very quickly. Mm-hmm. Where my mom, she was in hospice care for a very long time, and it was like the longest stressful, and she was in crisis care for a long time as well. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard watching. So mm-hmm. I am still, again, once grateful that he didn't have to go through, you know, a long period like my mom yeah. did.
And don't beat yourself up for that, because that's what we hear, too, is mm-hmm. families will say, I lost my dad 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. The person who was left was not really my dad.
Yeah.
I loved him. I took care of him. I'd do anything for him.
Yeah.
But you have all these little losses. So when the patient mm-hmm. finally does pass away, it's like, oh. It's they're out of this suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the memory of that birthday will never mm-hmm. fade for me, because, you know, my nephew walks in the door. He's like, Anthony, he recognized. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. he knew who everyone was coming in. We had balloons. We wanted to make it fun mm-hmm. because I knew it was mm-hmm. be his last birthday. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, do you, Dad, because he was in, we just got him out of rehab and mm-hmm. gotten him back into assisted living in mm-hmm. under the hospice care, because I wanted him out of rehab. He wanted out every day. He begged me to leave rehab. Mm-hmm. So I got him in, and I had kept telling him when he was in rehab, trying to give him something to look forward to, if that's even possible, you know, we want to do something fun for your birthday. Okay, okay, okay. Well, who's coming to my party?
Oh, like a little kid. Like a little
yes,
kid.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Who's coming? And he would ask me, are we still doing my birthday? When's my birthday? He would ask me.
He would ask you when his birthday was.
Yeah, when's mm-hmm. my birthday? When's my party? Yeah. So we were definitely, and I, at first I thought maybe it's going to be too much for him. I thought we were, initially, when I thought it would be better to include like the whole community, but realizing mm-hmm. there's no way that's going to happen. So we just did it in his room. But it was fabulous.
What a great memory.
Yeah.
What mm-hmm. a great memory.
I for me, it is. I'm hoping it is for my son and my nephew as well.
You'll be surprised. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure it mm-hmm. is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as time goes by, that will be what you'll remember. You won't remember the bad stuff,
mm-hmm.
the yeah. pain, what pains he went through. That birthday party will mm-hmm. be, and you'll smile, and you will, you know, I call them happy tears.
Yeah.
You'll have happy tears of just, you know, how excited he was. And, hey, Anthony, you know, and mm-hmm. and just the joy that you brought your dad in that snapshot in time.
Yeah.
So, you know. Kudos to you for being such a wonderful daughter. And it sounds like he was a wonderful dad.
He was a good dad.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I'm glad that you brought joy to other people by sharing him with them.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I miss him every day. And I go back and I play all kinds of things back in my mind of what I would have liked to have done differently. What I would do differently given a second chance, but you can't do that. So
Janet has a word.
I know.
For
so
that.
I come back and I have yeah. to have peace, and yeah. you've given me so yeah. much insight yeah. on the guilty. It's given me so much
yeah.
peace.
Don't coulda, shoulda, woulda. Yeah. You know, because you can't go back. And, you know, the thing is, you've learned so much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with this podcast, we are sharing what we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
You're sharing so much of what you've learned, and I can't thank you enough for being here. I mean, we're here because of you, but you are, you know, I have God bumps for what you've shared today of your experience of being a caregiver,
mm-hmm.
for loving your dad, and letting the love that he had for you go out through the air. So mm-hmm. thank you so much for the love that you had and the love that your dad had for you and what you've shared and everything. So thank you so much for mm-hmm. doing that today for us today.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And one thing you could do is tell us, because you can't change the past.
Right.
Janet says, and we have to say this just right, don't should.
No, don't should on yourself.
S-H-O-U-L-D.
Gotcha.
But you can use what you've learned. What would be one thing you would tell a listener to say, you know what, I'm going to recommend that you, listener, do this?
Sticking your head in the sand doesn't make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
That would be probably my biggest advice.
Okay.
You know,
good
and that
advice.
Absolutely. I don't think it, I think you have to understand it. I think you have to have the conversation and approaching it with that person. I do feel like you have to give that person the best quality of life as long as you can. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should say, oh, I think you have the beginning stages, or I think you have this or the other. I'm going to stick you in like some kind of memory care facility right away. But I think there's so many different things that you can do, clearly, that will extend the quality of life of that person. Mm-hmm. But ignoring it will do the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And it will cause frustration within that person, I 100% believe, because my guess is probably just like my dad, he probably knew something was wrong, mm-hmm. but did not want to admit it and was fighting those demons within himself,
mm-hmm.
which is not fair. Yeah. So that's not good.
No, thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this podcast episode. And we have another one that's coming up that's going to be very good as well. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.